State of the City work session where we review where we are on the State of the City report that we provide to the city every year, at least since 2009. So
I have handouts to pass out. I printed the latest version of everything that was sent to me except for Kirk's message. And I could run up and print that.
All of it myself already.
Okay. You just bring me one too. And I know that we're not going to sit here and read every word of everything that was written, but
despite how good it all was.
I think those of you who have read and written things, maybe you can speak to the general concept, and then people can take these home and read them and offer comments back to the authors. I didn't note on them who the authors were, but if you see something that looks familiar, say I wrote this, and then you can take a note saying I wrote that, or so-and-so wrote that. And we can talk about the lengths of things, some images, I guess, and tone. I still haven't read anything, but I do intend to read everything and offer comments back.
That's great.
We appreciate
in the next
that.
2 weeks at the latest.
And you will also be helping us with sort of just a little brief sort of, you know, here's what the year had. Right?
I will pull together the numbers on how many tape threes and DARs and briefings you participated in, how many probably type two staff level reviews and appeals you may have seen.
Although
that
I guess
information
it's sort of
that we typically
9 month or 10 month period, but
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it's less than a year, and we'll probably move next year's State of the City up too, because we're talking about moving both Design Commission and Landmarks Commission State of the Cities up to so that they are published before April, so that they capture the calendar year, not the fiscal year, because that would get you in front of City Council during the budget talks. Because what we've seen a lot is you guys requesting for HRI money, them saying, great idea, we'll do that. And then 6 months later, they forget. So if we're there asking for things right before the budget, then hopefully they'll remember.
So does that mean we'll skip next year?
No, I think we'll just move it up probably to June or July so that it occurs. Like last year, we did the State of the City in November. So this one's happening in September. So it will
kind of gradually move it back to April.
Yeah.
We probably need to find a more effective lobbying strategy than just our report, because we submit a report and then we don't talk to anybody about it necessarily, and every other person that wants money is sending paid lobbyists down there and or other social advocates or whatever it is, and it's we have to find a way to advocate for what we want beyond just this report, I think. So it's like the squeaky wheel sort of. It's not easy to do. I certainly haven't done it.
I mean, I will say last year when we were presenting our State of the City, I felt like we had their attention and they actually asked a lot of questions. It felt surprisingly, open and communicative, but not, that didn't mean necessarily that anything was followed through, but we do have that opportunity to kind of present it, and that's a really, hopefully, going to be like it was last year, where they have at least flipped through it and they're listening to what we have to say that day.
maybe it's just as simple as a hand thank you note of, hey, thanks for the support we thought we heard from you when we gave our presentation. Or, I mean, it's just a, it's, I know we have to move on to bigger things, but we.
Isn't there going to be some assessment being, or a inventory done of Bonneville or St. John's potentially, like a case? Isn't there some sort of test? I'm just curious. There was some funding.
I thought Brandon had some money and he was using it on an African American neighborhood study.
A grant from was like a teeny little 12K. I mean,
and I'm not sure he. I may be speculating. I'm not sure I actually heard what the
He said it down, so you can ask him when he gets here. Maya, could I ask you to put the mic closer?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, one of the suggestions that I had made in one of the pieces that I wrote, I think the one about density, was that we be more engaged as a partner to perhaps some of the other commissions in trying to handle or address our affordability problem. And I think we'll have better luck getting funding, getting a message out, and getting all kinds of things if we can achieve that. You know, be viewed as a partner in some sort of task force, or I know there are already a bunch of committees and whatnot, but it'd be good. I think that even if we were to get some visibility that way, it would help to Matthew's point. People remember that we're not just always asking for money. We're asking for money because, you know, we can be a good partner to the rest of the city's bureaus in addressing our affordability crisis. We're a good partner because we can help increase density in the inner city. We're a good partner because we can help stimulate economic activity through, you know, adaptive reuse, or I don't know, something like that.
I like that tone too, because that is not the accusatory, you've done everything wrong, we're really unhappy. And that a little, just in the dichotomy of your letter, we can talk about the seesaw of that. And I think, you know, as you end the letter with the sort of, we're here to help you solve these problems together, it's not us against you, it's us together, and you just need to recognize how effective we can be at making you look good, or you know, so. Mm-hmm. Anyway, in terms of tone, for sure.
There's some tension between, you know, the tone, and I think that in the past I've been tried to be, you know, fairly uplifting and positive, and it seemed like we had a positive reaction last year, but nothing happened. So it's like there's, no matter what we do, whether it's, you know, a little bit like holding them accountable to the discussion that we had last year, or just being positive on everything, it seems like we get the same outcome. But I do like your idea in terms of a sustained lobbying effort, because I think we had, again, you know, a fairly successful meeting with Marshall, from Commissioner Udaly last year.
Although now she's no longer our commissioner.
That's right. That's right. But I mean, the thing is that we went there, we had a positive, what I thought a positive outcome was, definitely at least an open ear to what we had to say. And then we just kind of left and we never followed up. And it's, you know, definitely my fault for not trying to sustain. You never know, like, how, you know, what's happening behind the door. You just kind of assume like, oh, okay, we talked to them once, they understand where we're coming from, and, you know, then they'll be consistent in terms of what happens. But you're right.
It's,
I mean,
like
other
any
people,
fundraising,
other people,
you
are,
have to keep asking and asking and asking. I mean, right. It is. It's just like any other fundraising. I think ultimately is each of us maybe trying to get a coffee with one of the commissioners, or a follow up phone call to one of their staff members saying, you know, hey, we heard some interest from our presentation, and is there any more information we can give you? Can we how can we make you more effective lobbying with your fellow commissioners? What more information can give? You know, just it's like a constant. And I'm not good at it either, because I've been on enough boards where you're asked to raise money and it's not easy to do. So
No.
There's also an opportunity with the changing of the assignments to maybe say, hey, we understand that the assignment has been changed. Might this be an opportunity for us to speak with you a little bit about our commission and, you know, some of the things? We're about to present you a state of the city, but, you know, we just wanted to I don't know if that would make sense, but Mayor Wheeler
also,
is the person, right?
Describing the momentum that's occurred, because one of the things that you had a reflective tone in your letter about, and I'm sorry for those who didn't get a chance to read it, but, you know, you're reflecting on your 7 years or whatever, and, you know, we can describe a lot of positive momentum, and then is it going to stop now? I mean, it's almost like all these, the leaders have put us on a path, I think, and are we going to carry that path forward, or, you know, so it's sort of, it's trying to elicit them in a broader campaign that started before them, and not want them to necessarily ruin it at this point. So, I'm talking tone more than
it may. And
I don't have a scholarly.
I mean, it may help to mention the fact that, I mean, Art DeMuro, you know, specifically told me over lunch one day in Chinatown. He's like, the reason why I think you're going to be a good member of the commission is that, you know, we really need to have the inventory updated. And that was 8 years ago. Yep. And I feel like, in general, I feel like a failure because, and I'm not saying that, you know, lightly, it's because that I look at other jurisdictions and I really do wonder, you know, what do we need to do to put ourselves over the top of that? How can we, you know, there are a lot of competing demands, obviously, with the city council. I mean, when you think about the varied things that they're, you know, with competing resources, they need to be able to justify, you know, why aren't we spending this money on homelessness? Why aren't we spending this money on public safety? Why aren't we spending this money on a whole host of, you know, what appear to be, you know, large socially, you know, important issues? And I think the importance comes from, you know, the opportunity it provides in terms of economic development. Yes, and then there's also the social component too. That's much more difficult to kind of quantify, and that is, you know, making people feel like they're a part of the community, and you can do that through history, you know, in terms of the types of stories that and resources that you ultimately choose to preserve or to, you know, tell a story about. So, I mean, and so that's in some ways the message. We need to give them the ammunition they need to be able to talk to these other constituencies and say, yes, we can give them $100,000 because these are the benefits and they're going to provide a benefit for your interest as well as a result of that.
I think one thing I have to add to your, you know, kind of benefits of preservation list, if you're starting one, is really just the idea that it benefits us all as Portlanders to have unique places. You know, you should know where you are, and we want people to move to Portland because it's Portland, not because, you know, it could be anywhere else. And so I think creating architecture that stems from an idea of architecture that's already here, you know, kind of looking at places that really are unique in terms of already developed neighborhoods and preserving those. So that's part of, you know, maybe somewhat related to the first idea that you mentioned, but it's not so much related to, you know, necessarily a story of the past as it is just a story of the present and sort of feeling like you're in a place.
Yeah, and I guess just along those lines, I wanted to mention that in doing the pieces that I was assigned to, I ordered a few books. You might already be familiar with these, but this one, for instance, the Economics of Historic Preservation is supposed to be helpful in terms of some ideas as to how to, you know, kind of what Kirk was saying, you know, pitch the notion that spending money on historic preservation benefits the community in these ways, and these are the returns. And it because it cites specific studies, you know, I mean, I think from what I know, Wheeler is a numbers guy, so it's helpful to have, I think, some of the statistics that are available. And I think this is the most updated version, if anybody's interested. This is from National Trust, I think.
I would love to look at that in a little bit. Yeah.
Would it be appropriate maybe to include some information from that, you know, along with the articles? Because
yeah, I mean, and some of the things that I cited in my pieces were from books that I.
But maybe like a graphic or statistics that we can kind of really punch up.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then this, I got for the URM piece because this was recommended by the. I mean, you guys are. This is not my sandbox, so this is probably like really elementary to you. But for me, I found it really helpful in terms of understanding sort of the dynamics around, you know, rehabilitation and reuse of historic buildings in terms of both economics and, you know, there are apparently some engineering things that.
Yes.
So, anyway, if anybody's interested.
What's the name of that one?
This one's called Feasibility Assessment Manual for Reusing Historic Buildings, and it's written by the, I think the same person, right? Donovan
Ripkema.
Ripkema.
Ripkema, isn't it?
See, I knew you knew them, these people.
Yeah. Well, the report that you sent out was by his office. That really nice graphic, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm.
Place economics.
Place economics. That's his business. I mean, that's all comes to the same idea. Have you read that report?
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It broke it down so easily, and it was such a compelling argument. And you look at the statistics. I mean, it'd be great. I was saying if we could get those guys. I mean, it was hired by the Landmark Commission, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. The
Do we have any money in our coffers?
I would love to get Don here because he's a genius, and just have him speak to City Council for an hour. That's what I would spend our money on.
When I was doing some research, I found a report that I ultimately didn't think was appropriate, but it might be in terms of the argument against why historic preservation is being made the boogeyman for low-income housing. And it's a report, and I can send it to you guys, but it's a report that was done in Colorado about the fact that all this low-income housing that was built 15 to 20 years ago is now coming off the federal requirements, and it's being converted into non-low-income housing at super rapid rates. Like, compared to historic preservation, it's a joke. So I don't know if the same phenomenon and sort of that whole tax sort of Brandon might know applies in Oregon, but it's just interesting to see that stuff that was built in 2005 is now potentially no longer low-income housing because it's gone through the whole cycle of the way it was created to begin with, using all the federal monies. And anyway, it's an interesting report. I found it doing searches on preserving historic low-income housing, mm-hmm. and. Yeah. They just didn't mean historic low-income housing. They meant the stuff we already have. But it's sort of, as I think about it more and more, it does really relate quite a bit. So, anyway, I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, kind of back to our document sharing and emails and everything. Has Landmarks Commission ever had a sort of shared FTP or something that, or is that sort of courting some challenges and legal issues if we did that?
I can ask.
It seems it would be really nice if we could all
do a Google
have a place for not only, you know, all those letters that we do produce over time, but
our bylaws.
Yeah. And then also just, you know, as we're developing stuff like this.
I think where we have an open meetings problem is if it's mm-hmm. in work in progress, if they're drafts, because then we could be collaborating without a public.
But maybe documents, you know, like finished. Already
even if
finished
it's not a case.
Things that others might want to refer to. Maybe that.
I can check to see if that's
let me know.
A possibility.
I want to mention regarding the URM and the item in the outline about design. You know, Maya's been pursuing the design studio for URM.
That's awesome.
Historic resource panel, the AIA is putting together a symposium in the fall, and they want to do a design competition as part of that. too, which I, so I've contacted Amy Woods about maybe being involved with that and kind of getting the commission to kind of support that.
So they, the AIA just recently did its call for nominations for various categories, and I was sadly disappointed to not see anything close to the related, and it would be nice if they could just include it as part of their bigger, you know, just add us to the whole award ceremony instead of making it a sort of one-off. Because it would have been nice to see, hey, call, your firm might have submitted something, or right. But there's no category recognizing any historic type work in any of their call for submissions, so that I could tell. I did talk to Peggy Moretti about it, just not wanting to. I wasn't sure what we were talking about originally. Obviously, we want to recognize some of the buildings that we've approved as our own kind of recognition in the report. I didn't want, Restore Oregon does their DeMuro Award, and that's a statewide award. So I don't, if it was part of the AIA's overall awards part, it might not feel so competitory with the DeMuro Award.
Nationally, I think they have it, don't they? Yeah. The AIA National has a kind of adaptive reuse preservation award.
There's got to be a model that someone's using. I haven't followed up on it, Annie. You're probably close. I'm an associate member, but I don't spend very much time over there, so. I stopped going to those committee meetings when I became a commissioner. So.
Well, it's a panel now. It's not even.
I know. I looked up today to see what that was. Yeah.
So it's not officially even part of the AIA, I don't think. They just allow them to use their space. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So, I'd be happy to. I mean, that's like, yeah, that drives me crazy too. So, I mean, if you need any help with thinking about how to bridge that and just have that, why not? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, did you guys probably, someone in your firm's got this call for submissions, I'm sure. I mean,
I don't even look at it because
I'll forward it to you guys.
It doesn't apply to me, so.
I looked just to see if there was a historic preservation award because they used to do, the mayor used to have a mayor's choice part of that whole architecture week that used to happen in May, and I don't know if that petered out. I don't pay that much attention to it, but it was a fun event when I did, and you know, maybe one of the counselors could present a People's Choice Architecture Award or something that at least said that someone was thinking about something about good preservation in Portland.
Maybe that's our entree into lobbying with council. Like, in addition to saying that there have been new assignments, we've selected you to present our Historic Preservation Award, and we would love to brief you on, you know, some of the things you might consider addressing during your speech.
Annie, I did want to touch base with you just in terms of workload. I mean, I know that giving you kind of the InDesign, you know, you sort of tentatively raised your hand to do it, and then in your email you said you were pretty swamped. And I just really do want to check in with you. And also, I know that the city, you know, staff has resources, they can help with that. So if you're totally overwhelmed, you should just say so, and you know, we can try to.
I just need this.
Okay.
Give me a little more time.
Okay.
I want to do it. I really.
Okay.
Do.
Awesome.
Yeah. Just don't. Yeah. No worries.
I appreciate it.
You'll be stuck with it forever.
Don't listen to him.
I just had the firestorm, you know, of stuff. So.
I know how that is.
But if it gets to the point where you do need help, then reach out to me, because we do have a couple of computers that have InDesign, and so we can help, you know, put stuff in and tweak it or whatever. I do want to note that we're meeting twice more before we have to ship this off to City Hall. I'm hoping to send it to City Hall on September 11th. So that we can look at it again on September 10th and be like, yeah, that looks okay, except for these little tweaks, and then fix those quickly. So hopefully we don't have too many on September 10th. But hopefully we can look at a final document that day.
This is probably a good time for me to mention, to those of you who don't know, I'm going to be taking a leave of absence pretty much right after this meeting. And I'll be back. What was the date?
September 25th.
September 25th. So I'm going to miss these meetings, the September 10th meeting and the other one, but I would still like to participate, if possible, in the State of the City report.
Well, I hope you still participate, yeah.
Yeah.
You've written a ton already. Thank you, by the way, for...
If she can, I might take a leave of absence.
Yeah, stop. All right. That's enough leaves of absence.
I have to leave this state for a little while. So otherwise, I would be here.
Okay. Well, we have
anything we can do,
you
let us know.
Your new email.
Thank you. So. Thank you very much.
Do we want to talk about organization at all, just with the outline we have, or
yeah,
does
I
it seem
there
like...
some changes from the one that got passed out, so
okay.
I just want to check, because the HRA is not on here. Did we decide to take that off, or am I missing it?
It should be in there. Did I? Oh, shit. In support of... Shoot.
where would that...
Sorry, I thought this was the last one I saw.
Yeah, because I have the URM policy, and then I have the one that's now numbered 3.
Yeah.
That should be in support of HRI. Just, yeah. And that's what I wrote on. These are my highlights. I was thinking that I looked at the past 2017 report, and I noticed that there was a 2019 priorities and goals, and I thought that'd be kind of nice to have that consistently. And I noticed the current preservation issues, and it'd be nice to bring, so just to have similar headings. And then the same thing with the 2017-18 accomplishments, I thought that would be nice to include, like, hey, there were some accomplishments. I don't know what they were, but I'm sure we can find one or two. And an update on the 2035 comp plan, because I think there was some reference to that at the previous report. So I just added those in there because they weren't in this current outline. And then there was the historic resources watch list, which I thought would be sort of nice if there's any other buildings that we know of or, you know, sites that are threatened. It'd be nice to put that in there. So those are my only changes. And then I just cleaned up my portions a little bit. So I apologize for the typo. So it is in there, the HRI.
So... I know we're going to be doing this more as we read all of these sections, but, you know, we're definitely going to have some overlap and, you know, try to massage things again, you know, before Annie even puts it into the, you know, the InDesign. But in terms of HRI, how do people feel about currently... There's a little blurb about it. If you go back to the piece that Wendy and I
saw that,
collaborated on under zoning code. But it doesn't necessarily fit that well in under zoning code. And we could just peel this out and, you know, expand on it a little bit more as a separate HRI topic.
I did. I made a whole, but you know what? I just use the Peter Meijer report, and I credited you guys because I was like, well, it was so well written, and it was so, you know, and I really focused on why is the HRI important. So I repeated it, and then I added a little blurb on Survey LA what they had gotten out of it, because I thought that was, again, sort of nice. Oh, I had a Seattle little blurb on Seattle. Like, I thought we could do like a breakout. So there's a little thing on the city of Seattle's inventory. And I also added that the state of Washington is now doing a whole statewide URM survey that actually ARG is involved with. So, I mean, they're actually paying for a whole statewide, and that's the Department of Commerce. So they're making, I guess I wanted to show that other states are, you know, step ahead.
Yeah.
And then for the Survey LA, I mean, it's really wordy, but it was like, God, they got so much out of this HRI. And granted, and I put that it was funded by the Getty, but I sort of just listed why And it could be, anyway, so just so you know, there is a separate section and it could be.
Point of clarification, yes. Did the city of LA request the money from the Getty?
That's a good question. I don't know.
So that would be like a first step, right, to getting money from the Getty.
I know the Getty actually kind of offered.
Okay.
I mean, I think it was a...
Because they're right there.
I can find out, because I do know the whole thing was managed through the city of LA, managed the whole thing.
I'm just curious who initiated, because if the city of LA initiated it, that speaks more to civic leadership than...
Yeah.
If the Getty initiated it.
And the other nice story that I thought was a nice story about it, it wasn't, ARG was involved, but there was like five or six other firms involved. It wasn't like ARG at all. It was a real concerted effort with people focusing on certain components of it, and then people were learned from each other. So
and volunteers.
There are volunteers. So yeah. Maybe I can sort of maybe, I wanted to, again, emphasize why is this important? Because in my head, it sounds good, HRI, HRI, but I was like, well, who cares? Why do we need to know? So just to kind of drive that home, but I could also maybe elaborate on it.
Okay. I'm going to make a suggestion that we all help you drive it home, and I did it with one sentence at the end of my text, which is basically additional analysis and surveying this historic building stock would demonstrate the value it has to meeting our city's comprehensive goals. If every one of our sections ties back to the HRI, where it's all contingent on the HRI.
It's in the front of the agenda is because that's the overarching.
Because you don't, each
thing,
section
right?
doesn't want to say again what the importance of the HRI.
It would be
is.
Nice if people could make a connection to it, either the end or the beginning of each article, and then maybe we pull that out as a, you know, a point to highlight, just so for the quick hit items, if you're thumbing through, you know, for each of these density and gentrification, there's a highlighted sentence that talks about the HRA to tie it back to that initial. It's the theme.
Yeah, I like that. Okay.
I like Annie's idea for the cover too.
Yeah, so we're just gonna do like a big bold diagram, like the HRA is the center, it's the sun, and all these other issues are just sort of orbiting around.
Yeah.
And not even going to have a picture of a building. It's just, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good
idea.
Do
we have enough gravity to hold this together?
The universe is going to split apart.
Okay. I like that.
All the different issues in terms of looking at the report outline, how there are, I guess there's still some few things we need to pull together, like the photo quiz.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
Okay.
Piece.
Okay. And then we have what else? And if anyone has any good examples or bad examples, definitely forward them on to Annie.
Yeah. So I guess that's one thing is I started working on it yesterday, but basically I'm trying to find buildings that relate to anything, you know, like right, it could be anywhere, but then I want also good examples of like, you look at this
Portland
building
Central.
You know it's in Portland, so if you guys have ideas about those, it's easy for me to find bad examples.
Okay.
So yeah, send me
specifically good new examples or examples of new urban infill or
something, you know, is Portland character, I guess would be the
I'm gonna work with Brandon to look at some photos he mentioned he had, so I'll see if I can send you some from those too.
And are they in historic districts, or are they additions to, or sort of to historic landmarks, or doesn't matter?
Yeah, well, I think specifically they would be in a historic district or, you know, a landmark. An addition maybe, or I would think.
Okay.
But they have to be in Portland.
Well,
right.
I mean, some of the bad examples, you know, I'm like, okay, here's two buildings side by side. Where are they?
Yeah.
You know, can you tell?
Don't
one's
let
in LA,
this happen
one's
to you.
Portland, they look the same.
Right.
One's a big jug on Sandy, and the other is.
Yeah.
Maybe conservation districts, like residential. I'm thinking maybe some residential. I mean, I know of a couple nice residential infill projects. There's single family. Conservation districts. Would that
potentially?
Are we looking at
it's
like
sort of hard to say, you know, like can you look at it and say this is Portland, because there's probably good examples of infill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other cities, Seattle, or so it's sort of hard to, in my mind anyway, to make that distinction, like what says Portland about a single family mm-hmm. home. So that's why I'm having a little trouble with the good.
So it's examples. More important. Sorry, I'm trying to understand exactly what we're looking for. So it's a Portland it's character sort of building.
Yeah.
The sense of place.
Exactly. Sense of place. Right.
Is there a new building that right. conveys that sense of place?
Got it.
All right, then in terms of the current preservation issues, it seems like we've got a good head start on the URM discussion. I think I saw.
Yeah, thank you, Maya.
Yep.
Again, that Maya, was all thanks to your letter. I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time coming up with my own.
And we might take it to the next level now that they've actually, you know, and you've done a lot more research too. So now I feel like we almost need to be in, okay, now that you've done this, how can we make this the most effective, streamlined, sort of successful, and not just turn out to be the next demolition of all the brick buildings in Portland?
So my text focused on, well, you can, when you read it, it was, I just said, we commend City Council for taking steps for the thoughtful implementation of it. I started, you know,
like that, up yeah. to,
and then I kind of focused on the fact that, okay, we've been talking about URM, but URMs are also historic, and so I focused on the historic and the URM conversation regarding the historic. So just so you know, I went in there thoughtfully. I didn't just take your letter, and I kind of went up again, update the HRI. You know, I started with number one. Again, the incentives, which they know, but sort of emphasizing that, you know, research non-prescriptive seismic upgrade options. So anyway, just so you know, I did customize it, if there's anything else I can add or you feel I could customize more, let me know. And then I added, and a little thing on incentives, which was my own text. Basically, I just, I talked a little bit about the Mills Act in California mm-hmm. and the property tax. And what a, you know, it doesn't have to be used for URM, but in the case of San Helena, they use that act. I had a little picture, and so
yeah,
I did.
It's great. Okay.
So last week I forwarded an email that talked about the resolution and the coming ordinance related to your URM. So I don't know if
I had that in there, and basically it's just basically that email was basically just you know, update of what that latest resolution had, and then it just basically said the sign ordinance is coming soon.
Yeah, we don't have the actual text yet, but I know that they're proposing to create two separate panels or committees. And here we talk about creating a panel. So I don't know if that's redundant or telling them to do something that it sounds like they are going to do.
You're right. That's a good point. I guess I was thinking for the URM panel, let me review that. You're right, because we don't want to have, it's like we already have a URM panel.
And hopefully one of you will sit on
one of them. This one was a little bit more detailed once it's passed. The idea was that once the, you know, you have somebody in the building department who would work directly with the building owners and help them guide you through the process. So, but I'll clarify that, and that's
like
a good point.
The Board of Appeals.
Or maybe like that's what it was.
That we had talked about.
Okay. I think that's a good point. And maybe touch on the Board of Appeals. Because it was two. It was one is to sort of help the people navigate the system and point them in the right direction, and the other was a Board of Appeals. So there's some body to enforce it, because just having an ordinance isn't going to help if there's no there's no consequences if they decide they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the City of Santa Helena did, is they had a Board of Appeals, actually.
Oh.
And they, case by case, would look at these cases and decide how to deal with it. And actually, the guys from San Francisco who was in the building department, same thing. Both of them said the same thing. You need to have repercussions, otherwise you don't have any teeth.
Right.
So
makes sense.
I think that's good. I'll clarify the panel and the Board of Appeals thing.
One thought I have to add to that is, you know, I don't know, Walt McMoney's, I think, is on the Restore Oregon board, and he owns a number of old apartment buildings that he has been over the years trying to seismically upgrade. and really investing in them, because some of them are really nice brick buildings up in Northwest Portland that you'd all recognize. So anyway, I think there was something in the ordinance about acknowledging previous seismic retrofits, and I don't know, maybe there's a case study of what he did. I have the drawings. I took a tour of the building. He was exploring some really innovative ideas of core drilling and dropping steel pilings into his brick walls. And I mean, so anyway, I just throw that out as an aside.
Well, that's a great idea. There was a gentleman who presented at City Council at the last hearing who was a bit older, and he was very methodically kind of stepped through this, what he did for his buildings, sort of pro
it could have been
seismic
him.
Upgrade.
He's very active in the group. There's an association. He's an attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a land use attorney.
Okay, I think that's a great idea. There should be some.
I'll shoot him an email and see if he wants to throw anything out. So.
So, Maya, you had added in terms of this outline update on 2035 comp plan. And I feel like that should just go up under 4C, you know, which is the section that I started with Wendy's help, which is about zoning code. This shouldn't really read zoning code supporting historic resources. It should just be zoning code relating to, perhaps. But anyway, I feel like I have definitely more work to do on that piece. And I also would like to add in the legislative agenda, because I feel like that's something that City Council is going to want to, well, hopefully they're going to want to hear from us about just what, you know, we believe should really happen at sort of the state level, and whether that can be supported by the city. And then I also wanted to just make a quick note about the pieces that, well, I'll include Wendy. Wendy, you jump in too, because you and I collaborated on some, and then you wrote one, and they are the pieces that have to do with, first off, gentrification and historic preservation. This is Wendy with some comments at the end, just, you know, in an email. And then the zoning code piece, that's sort of standalone. But then there's another piece that Wendy wrote, which is historic preservation can help increase density. And then there's another piece that, you know, we didn't really write anything, which is my fault, which is sort of equity and inclusion. And all three of those pieces, I'm not counting the zoning code piece, I feel like they're maybe bleeding together just a tiny bit. So as you read these, try to formulate your thoughts about, you know, whether we should pull apart some of these, or whether we should push them closer together. Because I'm not really sure, and I'm looking forward to reading these again myself and sort of deciding how I feel about them.
I noticed that some of what I was sort of blathering, and so you know, feel free to just say, you know, this doesn't belong in this category or whatever. But there's a lot of the gentrification piece speaks to some of Matthew's work on the affordability, and then similarly the densification, the density and historic preservation piece also touches on similar issues.
Yeah, gentrification.
But I think they are related, and so I kind of feel like there's some power, like some strength in putting those together, in the sense that, you know, one is kind of like a solution to a new problem, or not a new problem, but another is, you know, things you can do to mitigate, like gentrification, for example. One of the things you'll see in my piece speaks not only to the fact that there are people who've been driven out, but there are people who have come and then left because they are not encouraged to stay for any number of reasons. And so sort of like the reverse of gentrification might be, how do we attract, you know, people to Portland, particularly given that the highest number of immigrants, I guess, to the Portland metro area, according to the Oregonian, is Asian Americans, but we have like no Chinatown. Anyway.
I was to write on multifamily housing and SROs, but I made the argument that historic versions of those are a solution to equity and inclusion. So they're sort of, they start to tie together, and I don't have a lot of ego in my writing, so to speak. So if you want to cross all my stuff out or put it in another way or stick your stuff in mine, I think the ultimate goal for me is that we produce the best document.
Matthew,
that gets
our... Which piece is yours here that we just got printout?
This
of?
One?
Oh, yeah.
And it has the nice...
my thesis is in bold.
Yeah.
I didn't print everything that you sent.
Which I actually cited,
and I brought
some. I didn't put a copy of
cool.
in my piece.
Preserving multi... Oh, yeah. Got it.
But it does drift into density, equity, inclusion, ghettoization.
Okay. So we can all sort of try to determine if...
We're reading it all together. We
headings?
Can start
I
to,
mean, that's
yeah,
all,
yeah.
You know. Okay.
The other thing I just wanted to comment upon is that my citation formats are all over the board. There's like everything from Blue Book to APA to, I mean, there. So I don't really know. I hope somebody else knows how to cite this stuff.
You made me feel like this big. All your footnotes.
It was pretty ad hoc last
hands.
Time. So I think if we had
just dumped
a title
all my documents
author,
on you guys
in a year, I think we're good.
No, your stuff was really good, I thought.
I don't.
Did we decide to footnote this time?
She cited everything.
Well, I didn't.
We can have
it was just remarkable.
A list that. Of references in the back if we want, rather than having footnotes and references on every.
I think that would be cleaner.
Yeah.
Just from a.
Okay.
Oh,
and
right.
Plus,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like one go-to location if somebody wants to look up stuff.
Yeah. I will say, though, that there are some like actual quotes that we probably. Do we want to say where they. Came from? Don't we want to attribute to whomever?
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah.
We can still do it as end notes.
End.
Okay.
It'll be end notes.
Okay.
That's all.
We're yeah. Okay. I don't want to plagiarize.
No.
I'll add more footnotes to where I dumped a lot of those documents on you guys where I got it. And to be honest, that reurbanism stuff was fairly new to me. That whole study on using spatial statistics, all that. I don't know if that has been debunked, vetted. It looked like a very thorough study of those three cities, and they've applied mm-hmm. that map now to 50 U.S. cities. It looks about as scientific of analysis of a grid by grid. You know, there are some, obviously, with any sort of sampling, you throw out certain odd men out, but if you guys are familiar with it. I don't want to reference something as, you know, a scientific assurity without, but the green building or the green lab is pretty
well
regarded. So
I did recite that as well. And
okay.
I did do some research to make sure that it was a reputable, it's well cited by those in the preservation community as being not debunked, at least not yet.
I think they're in big trouble if that's going to be a very useful tool in sort of making some of these planning decisions on a more scientific basis and less subjective about how you kind of feel things are going. So, or at least metrics.
But they may change because, you know, how they used to say that babies should be face down and then they decided they should be face up and then they decided they should be on their sides and then then they decided, I don't even know what it is now. I think they're face down again. I can't remember.
Don't even have them. It's too dangerous.
Amen to that.
But it speaks to some of the issues that you were addressing about gentrification because it's cross-referencing like census data with built environment data so that you can actually, you know, quantify, well, how many minorities are living in this neighborhood versus this neighborhood and what does the character of this neighborhood look like compared to that character. So, you know,
absolutely.
I think it's... the infancy of it's like fractal geometry, it's at the very infancy of what it, what the potential is for some of this.
I agree.
My head's gonna explode between babies and fractal geometry.
Plastics,
that's right.
Plastics.
Oh my gosh, great.
So I think just getting back to the kind of the realities of what Annie has to deal with now, we have to kind of
bring this into kind of the space requirements. And I think that I'm so glad that we'll have more probably than what we'll be able to put in there. And so I think it's just going to be a matter of let's, you know, as soon as we start plugging this stuff in, I think we'll have a real reality check in terms of what we can actually include. But I, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'm also kind of debating whether or not we have an appendix that kind of captures some of these kind of very issue specific things that people have really gone above and beyond in terms of their level of research. And so, you know, if people want to dig, maybe we give them the opportunity that they can dig into something that's, you know, kind of consistently put together and at the end of the document. So I don't, I mean, that way we capture the essence of what everyone is saying, but we can do it within the space requirements that that city council kind of is.
And, digest.
Yeah, feel a little more digestible.
So I'm just looking at the outline and everything that I have, and it looks like, so we don't have the photo quiz. I looked like we had three and we had four. I think, so correct me if I'm wrong. Five and six, are they covered in here? Density and gentrification and legislative agenda?
We have density and
density and gentrification are me and Wendy's pieces, I think, and we're getting there. Okay, so.
And I sent a little article about how older buildings are denser, and
I'll take a look. Okay, no, you do. What about six? Legislative agenda.
We need that. We don't have that. I don't think.
Yeah. Are you working on that, or?
I guess I will. I've got some very brief mention of the legislative agenda that's in there right now in terms of anticipating what's going to happen this next legislative session and how we can best kind of position our position with city council and trying to get them off the fence of non-position, which is a position.
I can work with you on that because I was sort of thinking that I would tie it into, you know, zoning code stuff, but it's maybe not, you know, maybe it's its own thing, but still, I'm happy to.
Okay.
I think it would also be helpful to maybe mention some of the other cities that have participated and have taken a position one way or the other on some of the legislation that we've already seen. Just because you'd think that the largest city in Oregon would want to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if very many cities have.
Well, Astoria.
Did Astoria take a position on 2007 then? Mm-hmm. They did.
Uh-huh. And
Bend, maybe.
Bend did.
Yeah. And so did, there was one other, like really small.
Jacksonville, maybe?
Where?
Jacksonville, maybe?
Jacksonville, yeah, maybe. Okay. But it just seemed as though, it seemed strange to me that, you know, the city with the, you know, the highest number of historic resources wouldn't take a position.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So I'll just say one thing, and I don't have much of an update, and I won't use this time to do it, but we're still hearing that there's legislative interest in Salem in pursuing a concept or potentially a bill around historic resource issues broadly. And I think some of the topics that have come up in those conversations have to do with protections for National Register districts, the owner consent statute, but also quite a bit of conversation around the expiration of special assessment. So if not renewed in the 2019 legislative session, special assessment will likely expire. And even though it's not a perfect tool, it's our only statewide tool and the oldest statewide tool in the country for tax incentives for historic resources. And so that may be an area of exploration if you're looking at other jurisdictions or other places outside of Portland or Oregon to look at what some of those tools might look like. But also knowing that City Council will be reviewing a legislative proposal from Bureau of Emergency Management related to seismic incentives. And so there may be some synergy with an incentive conversation between the seismic piece and then the expiration of special assessment. And the other piece, too, just to bear in mind, is that council will be considering their legislative policy positions in the sort of Christmas first of the year timeframe. And so you going to council in September is ahead of the curve, but probably a good time to set the table for what it is you think will be important.
So Brandon, could you expand a little bit on what you're saying is happening with respect to protection for natural? Like, is that vitiating those protections, or is it like, are you hearing that there's some interest in strengthening the protections, or?
I think, and this is why I don't have much of an update, is that I haven't heard any direction from a legislator yet on what they would like to do. So it's not like in Salem, there's interest in having that conversation, but no meeting has happened that sort of has decided a direction on that. I would suspect that there will be some interest around the automatic protection of natural register resources. So places like Eastmoreland, Laurelhurst, that same conversation that happened in HB 2007 around whether or not new natural register resources ought to be afforded the Goal 5 demolition review protection.
And then presumably some of this would cover the issue of whether or not state law should govern the establishment of trusts, which is what the feds opined. They kind of sent it back down to the state level. So I'm assuming if this is going to go on the state, the state legislature is interested, and my guess is that they probably want to legislate around that also, right?
I don't know. I think part of that question is wrapped up in whether or not the National Register continues to bring protections with it.
Right, because it won't matter. If there are no protections, then who cares if you can establish trusts or not? Got it.
But I mentioned at a previous briefing that there was a work group assembled down in Salem for some of us to participate in. To date, that work group there's been no conclusive outcome. It's been information sharing and no go, no go. Or even sort of direction from that group.
But the city, just to clarify, the city will not be taking a position on whether or not to protect new National Register resources?
Oh, I think we're too early. I think that covers, how it says.
We have a lot of
work. I don't know. And that'll be a question for city council, not so much a question of...
No, I know, staff. I know. But I mean... And this is not a new question.
It's a fundamental.
it's kind of fundamental to the.
Or not, yeah.
So. I mean, it's kind of fundamental to the program. It's been fundamental to the program for however many decades.
Right. And it is, that conversation is so intricately tied to how our code is set up today, how we've managed historic landmarks in the past, and the state owner consent law that ball of protections and state preemptions and requirements, I think, exists in the same conversation. So it would be hard to have a conversation around automatic protection of National Register resources if not for a conversation around owner consent. How do we manage all of the things that are already designated on the National Register and protected? And so for that, I don't yet know whether there's appetite in Salem to open up that Pandora's box of multiple questions. Personally or professionally, I'm interested in having that conversation. It's a big one to have.
Without getting into the weeds and the details on what it is, can we get a principle of just we endorse the idea of preserving historic buildings? I mean, just the city of Portland is for preserving our historic resources, and so whatever we do, the state law, we support doing it with the aim of preserving historic resources.
Something you could do, or the commission could consider, is there's a policy in the comprehensive plan, I think it's 4.57 or 4.59, that says that as part of our planning process, the city will advocate at the state and national level for historic preservation programs. And so there's an established policy that council established, it's now codified in our plan. That's something you could hang some of your hat on in terms of legislative priorities and the bigger policy decisions are made. I think in terms of the kind of list of things that I just mentioned, you know, special assessment is not a perfect program. The National Register program is not a perfect program for protecting historic resources. Owner consent is probably worst practice nationally for how to designate resources. And so our existing bag is not a great one. So I think that conversation isn't just let's hold on to what we have, but what would be better.
I guess as an analogy, it's like, can we all agree that peace is the goal here? You know?
Yeah.
If we can't agree that preserving historic preservation is what we're all trying to do, I mean, then we're almost
sides.
Kind of at a, yeah.
Just kidding.
I'd be happy if we could just get the city to make not even a code change, but just a statement of policy that they think historic preservation is an important aspect of our planning for the future. So at least we know what the position is at that point, whether it leads to any legislative changes. And I don't mean to put you on a spot here, but anyway, just...
In terms of the legislative agenda, I put this in the letter, like what some of the initiatives or ideas for initiatives should be. And it's very painted very broadly. It's not very specific. But is there anything, at least broadly, that I should be mentioning in the legislative agenda that's not already covered? So just, you know, come back to me with some ideas and I'll toss them in there. Okay. I will likely recast that first paragraph.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, on one hand, if you're negative right now and you feel like you're reflecting on 7 years, but from the time I moved to Portland and learning about the history of Portland and what happened during the urban renewal periods and going to lecture on then and now and looking at whole cast iron districts that are gone, I kind of feel like, you know, Portland has been on a slow, kind of more progressive understanding of the importance and uniqueness that it has, and the world has recognized that. We've almost become aware of it as the rest of the world has gone, wow, what a cool place. And so it's just really just kind of getting everybody to say, yes, that was good, and we got to keep pushing forward.
Okay.
And part of it is just, can you acknowledge that that's a good direction to go?
Okay.
Sorry, I don't mean to be. Oh, it's easy to sit here and rant on, and so.
That kind of leads into number 8, the stories from Portland, Ernestina.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've been working on that or if you need ideas.
Yeah, I've been using this a little bit. I don't know if you've seen this report. So it has some of the potential historic district that they studied, the Portland Amherst Commission studied before doing the historic resource inventory. And I thought it was a good resource. I thought it was a good resource to get started to what was in the late 1970s and early 1980s to what they thought it was being threatened by them and what we by now know has been already threatened and we already lost. So, and we know that some districts have been more affected by the new wave of people moving in and all that. So I was gonna briefly mention the trends of growth of the city and then pick some neighborhood like Albina and I thought about also the Corbett area that has now the tribe is going to go through it, and they're already mentioning there that the Jewish community was moving out of there. Right now, they completely moved out of there because they even sold the synagogue and everything. So it's like some changes that have been happening, and so it's just briefly touch on some of those neighborhood. I wasn't sure if I could. I would try to talk a little bit about Lloyd District and the changes going through it as a how it happened before, and then now that it was a like the renewal area, and then now it's happening again. It's new changes through it. So that was kind of my take on, and also focusing again. This was a report done in the 80s for the report that was going to happen later, the inventory, and then the inventory happened, and this still. I mean, nothing is being updated since this black and white report. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's had any idea on any other neighborhoods that it might be good to.
I think it's interesting to take a look back and sort of make that analysis. So I think that's an interesting idea. I might add that one, those are all representative sort of big things that happen, like urban renewal, but there's what we have right now is this sort of slow erosion where you can't even remember what was on the corner. So it's a sort of a different type of a massive change because it's like little bit by little bit, but super fast in a way. That seems different today to me than...
I wasn't sure how to call this growth. Like I think that when I talk to people, why did you been attracted by the city? Like you ask people, why are you moving here? And it's a lot about sustainability, the livability of the city. So people are moving here because of that. You can't find that in other cities. So they think this is a cool place to live in. So you move here, you don't have a job, but it doesn't matter. You're going to find it one way. And then you just figure it out how you're going to live it. So, and that's been bringing a lot of people. And one of the things that I always think is interesting when you ask a person why you move here, many times they say like, well, because I have family, a friend or somebody who was here and they were established, so they bring more. And then when you bring them, they also bring their culture, whatever it is with them. So it could be hipsters, it could be Asians, Latin Americans, or Russians, or anybody from different countries, and they all form their own community, and they all stick together, and they form this neighborhood that will later, I mean, by now we have this new wave, but in 50 years, we're going to look back at what happened by now, and then we're like, oh, all these people that moved here and created bike lanes and created this pedestrian path and community gardens and spaces, and they now might change in 50 years, and we want to preserve whatever they did in that time. So kind of looking at that movement.
The big or smaller, better, whatever that study was, actually found that young people live more in the older parts of town. So it's almost contrary to they want modern lifestyle, green living, close to facilities, but that turns out to be the actual oldest part of town because it was designed when people walked all the way all around anyway. So it's like innately pedestrian because it was designed before the car. So
yeah, I was just talking to some coworkers and he was saying that one of the guys that started working recently in the office, and he said, I want to move to a place that'll have to be at least 7 restaurants around me because I don't cook. I have to walk. So, and I take Uber. I do not own a car. Yeah. And the other guys are like, oh, I never go to the supermarket, so I order everything to my house. So it's like all these little details of how people's lives is changing. But then older neighborhood have already all this developed. If you go to the suburban areas, you're not going to find. Yep. So
not only can you not walk anywhere, they've zoned it to where even if somebody wanted to put a store in, you can't
do it.
You can't build one unless it's a 7-Eleven on the periphery of the suburban development. So I think that while we deal with historic preservation, I think a really interesting challenge for the future of designers and architects and planners is how do you remake suburban America into 20-minute neighborhoods, and certainly the zoning is one component of that. It's interesting urban challenge for the future, or the now, actually, not the future.
Well, do you guys are aware of the Metro 2020 urban plan that was done by Peter Calthorpe? Just done by, it was higher Portland, Oregon. They're the ones who kind of set up the urban both growth boundary and the whole idea behind pedestrian pockets and light rail, and so it's the same thing, but sort of using, including the historic, the same thing. The whole idea was smaller blocks, live work, and residential or retail, and alleys, and the whole new urbanism is this whole idea of making it more livable and walkable, and using the historic historic layout as the precedent for it. And Portland hired them. So they have a whole Urban 2020 master plan. I don't know if that's being used still. I don't know. Are you guys aware of that? I'm going to find it and send it to you.
Yeah, maybe we can at least cite it, and kind of get it in
I'll
here
look
that
it up.
Way.
Yeah, because there was a real movement, I guess, in the 90s towards neo-traditional planning.
Right.
Well, Congress for New Urbanism is pretty active today. I mean, that's a pretty active
group. And
that
came out of that.
I'm sure. I think it probably did. Yeah, and also the... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to.
They came by my house recently.
The local folks?
No, they actually, they had their meeting, their annual meeting or something, and they came from, there were people from Seattle and from Vancouver.
Well, that's Michael Mahaffey, and I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, but I don't.
And John Zarnicki and his wife Mary, and there's a whole little group of. I went to one of their conferences, and they filled up a room of interested people talking about, you know, traditional urbanism, basically.
I didn't see. I know both of them, Mahaffey and Zarnicki, but I didn't see either of them. But this was
Duncan,
like a.
I think the guy from Seattle.
Yeah, he's tall. And
he's a Notre Dame graduate.
Oh, he walked by and said, was looking at this. Anyway, he didn't know I was. I didn't know that those two were members of that.
Well, for that piece, I'm wondering if they can be broken up into little snippets, though. It says sprinkled throughout so that there's something that keeps the reader engaged because they get a short piece or something before they get into the meaty issue stuff.
The flogging.
The fly.
I think we could also use some illustrations for some of these pieces, maybe, that might, help break it up.
This might get longer. There might be more pages than this one. I think that might be a good thing, because, I don't know.
I mean, some of these are pretty dense already, just looking at them.
Totally, yeah.
That's the appendix version. Yeah. Everyone, Sheena, I need your little bio.
Okay, yes.
Sorry.
I was just going to say everyone should really feel empowered to suggest, editing down. I mean, I hope everyone feels like they can do that and they should do that to everyone else's work.
It might help too when you start laying it out, Andy.
Yeah.
Be like, you got to chop half of this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I need to do it soon.
Yeah.
I would add tone is another component that we all need to sort of help temper each other on.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going
to
take it on.
Wendy, no, not to pick on you, but there's some charged stuff in yours and that's true. And I need to accept it all, but as a white person, but we have to be careful how we.
Definitely.
Anyway.
I think one other thing to keep in mind.
Very well written, by the way. It's just there's some strong, poignant facts, I should call them, but.
Well, you mean the part that says, at best shallow.
Racist piece. No, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, you mean about the Black Lives Matter, the token Black Lives Matter signs, that one?
That
was a quote.
Actually, I think all of it read fine. It just had a tone that might make the reader not be as open to the arguments we're trying to make about preservation. And it might tin their ear.
Especially white
men who maybe don't listen when they should anyway. So.
Well, I'm open to whatever suggestion. And I appreciate
others should read it. I just thought it had a little bit of a. It was truth, but it was.
Yeah, no, I welcome those comments because we certainly don't want to shut anybody off, from the,
I don't want you to temper the truth either. I'm just saying I want us to be, feel free to monitor my tone always. That's just in the report.
I think along the lines of tone, one thing to keep in mind is that Hillary's bureau and your bureau has a new commissioner in charge, and the mayor has never had this bureau before. And so for all intents and purposes, you have an opportunity to help your new commissioner in charge understand what it is that you do. And while most of the people at the dais have been at council before, the mayor is still relatively new. And I think this is a good opportunity to remind council, help council understand what role you play in the city, why it's valuable, and then to be thoughtful about what will be on their plate in coming months that they can act on, or that you can help them set the policy table in terms of where the commission will fall. And I think you've talked about a few of those things, the residential infill project, the legislative agenda, historic resource code project, better housing by design. Those types of things will be going to council before your next State of the City. And so it's a really good opportunity to bring up to speed on what you do, and then to start to prepare them for the direction you'll be going with each of those specific projects when they land in council's lap. So just thinking a little bit about the unique moment of the mayor having both BDS and BPS in his portfolio and helping bring him along with the other commissioners.
Good point.
Do you think he would ever have any bandwidth now that he's the commissioner in charge to want to meet with any of us to talk about issues? Or, I mean, is that too far below his sort of time bandwidth? Or
I can, of course, check on that.
I mean, I one way to approach that would be, right, hey, you're the new commissioner, and we want to make this the most successful period in the history of Portland. We want to empower, you know, we want to know what your agenda is and how we can help you achieve it through historic preservation.
That's a great idea. Right. I mean,
I'm just doing what I can.
It's housing, we have ideas, or, yeah.
And we're part of the solution, which is to help you. But he may have taken over because he has other ideas about
He also has the Housing Bureau in his portfolio.
And we're trying to make arguments that we're part of the solution for housing, lower middle income housing in Portland too. So anyway.
Could we do like a wine and cheese meet and greet or something? Kind of like fun.
I don't see why not.
Or 15 minutes, like, just 15 minutes with his staffer. I mean, I'd take whatever we could get.
We'll give them wine too. You know, something just sort of like an invitation almost, like whatever he'll bite.
I didn't know we could ply them with alcohol. That's useful.
Turn it up.
W-H-I-N-E.
Yeah, we'll say it was your idea, yeah.
Ply them, hope they accept, and then...
One other thing along those lines you might think about is generally commissioners will have their staff draft talking points for council hearings. They're busy, and they ask their staff to help them out. So it would be expected that some of the commissioners and likely the mayor would have developed some things that he would want to say on the record at the end of your presentation. If you could get on the mayor or one of his policy advisors' schedule, it could be an opportunity to sort of help them get brought up to speed before the public release of the report, just so they know where it is you're at and what you're doing, just to help have a good dialogue.
That's a great idea. I think it's a good idea. That's so that it never feels like a gotcha moment, too. I think that's important that people, you know, have a chance to, I don't know.
Maybe we should give him a copy of Kirk's letter so he's not blindsided.
After it's finally edited. This isn't one of those last day, finally get to tell the boss what you think.
I think in the past we've been fairly sharp, I think, with city council. So I think that...
Mike.
What's that?
Your mic.
I think in the past we've been fairly sharp with city council when it came to certain issues. And I think we've been candid as well about our position on House Bill 2007, residential infill projects, and a variety of other things. I think that we shouldn't be afraid to be candid and to hope. But I think the key word perhaps is holding them accountable to what they say. And maybe that's kind of the frame of reference that I provide. Rather than whine. Because I think all politicians ultimately have to be responsive to their constituents. And when they do say, make a commitment, or in a, you know, promise a dialogue, that they follow through with that dialogue. Because it didn't happen after the last meeting. And despite some, you know, what we all thought was some very positive traction, it just reinforced, you know, what Matthew was saying, is that there's a lot of other competing voices, and the more voices they hear from those competitors, the more likely we're coming in last place. So, okay.
You know, Kirk, one thing along those lines, you triggered a thought. About accountability. It was just a few months ago that the comp plan was adopted and put in place, and there are so many policies among those, the ones that Brandon mentioned and a couple that are in Kristen's piece, that require a bunch of things, not the least of which is updating the HRI. But I mean, my point is that we might want to somehow tie this back to congratulating them on the on the adoption of the comp plan and reminding them, hey, you know, these policies, you know, were among those that you, you know, agreed to adopt. I don't know if that, and from an accountability standpoint, if that fits in at all.
Yeah.
I'm not against that either. And you know me, I'm the provocateur sometimes. So, I mean, I'm, it's just doing it without making an enemy. I mean, it's, you want to make sure that there's the day after they, you know, get held to account, or so to, however you want to phrase that, that you can still dialogue a way forward. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we have certain city council members that have an ear. Where we have their ear already, it's making the other city councilors want to counselors as opposed to have to counselors. I guess that's the best way to put it.
No, never mind. Never mind. Inappropriate.
I don't know. So you guys are more tuned in that than me. Yeah. We got a little start, you guys.
Yeah.
We're sort of.
We got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Can we take a picture?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Please. Can you pull that screen up? The picture?
Let that be the last thing that we do before we...
Okay. Does anyone else have anything to add in terms of items of interest to the commission, by any chance? Okay. If
I go. We'll add one quick thing.
Okay.
We have not signed an agreement yet with our grant poor. But we were given preliminary approval for a mid-sized grant that would, we think, be sufficient to update the South Portland Historic Design Guidelines in 2019. And so we need to get signatures from City Council and an agreement with Metro. But we were given approval for updating those design guidelines. We think it's a pretty important project. One, the South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines are the oldest design guidelines in the city. So they're from 1980, just after that document that Ernestina shared with you.
Smiley and two, faces and all.
Metro, TriMet, the city are actively pursuing the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project, as you all are probably aware. And having new approval criteria in the historic district, we think, is an important part of the sort of pre-development planning that would be necessary for putting in a light rail line.
I would strongly urge caution in terms of doing that now. And I think that the main reason is that it's currently proposed as mitigation for that project. And I don't know if you've spoken to FTA about that specifically, but I would strongly urge you to have Metro have that conversation if they haven't.
We can. This was on the Neighborhood Association's high priority list. So coming out of the Neighborhood Association from 2010 or so, they've been asking for new and updated approval criteria. But in terms of the light rail project, our thinking was to get ahead of mitigation or any sort of...
I'm just saying that sometimes if you have something proposed for mitigation and an agency provides funds to the city to do that, that can have pretty significant implications for that project in terms of it being pre-decisional. And I'm not saying that lightly.
For mitigation.
Whether or not you call it mitigation or not, it's in a federal document now. And so it's really more FTA's call than Metro's call. So I would strongly urge Metro to have that conversation with FTA if they haven't.
Wouldn't the neighborhood associations share the same concern? I know nothing about it, but if they were to get that, would they say what we should hold off to? I mean, maybe they wouldn't pressure for it anymore if they knew it was going to have a detrimental effect potentially.
To be honest, I would urge you to use it somewhere else, anywhere else, where it's not linked to something that's already been proposed for mitigation.
And we would return the grant in that case.
You wouldn't do it for something else.
No, it's specifically for Southwest Corridor. But noted.
Okay.
Otherwise,
I don't
cool.
Know.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously the design guidelines of almost every district needs to be updated except for one. Some of them actually just need to be drafted because there aren't any.
Actually, the one that was just adopted should probably be updated in
the
light of the
district
new
district nomination.
Yeah.
Really be updated. But
reconsidered.
Anyway,
yeah. Thank you. Anything else? Okay.
Are we adjourned?
Meeting adjourned.